Welcome to the Bundesliga show. I'm John Hartley and alongside me is Terry DeFellin. Terry, with so many changes in the Bundesliga in the last 7 days, I'm surprised that you haven't swapped me for another podcast co-host.
Indeed, yeah. Well, yeah, we'll see how things go after the end of this one, shall we?
Yeah, why not? Okay, and we're also joined on the line from Munich by commentator and Bundesliga writer Andy James. Andy, this is your second time on the show. Welcome back.
Thanks very much for having me. Delighted to be back.
Okay, guys, the big news of the week are the changes in coaching staff in the Bundesliga. So what's happened since last week's pod? Well, let's start at Schalke and Wolfsburg. Felix Magath parted company with the Royal Blues and made way for former Hoffenheim coach Ralf Rangnick. If that wasn't enough, Magath then ran straight up the road to former club Wolfsburg and replaced both Pierre Littbarski and sporting director Dieter Hoeneß. Whatever happened to the phrase, never go back, Terry?
Well, perhaps it doesn't exist in Germany. I'm not certain. It's an odd situation, isn't it? Because the axiom has been about Magath for some time that he goes to a club for a couple of seasons, he does really well at that club, and then they've all had enough of him, they can't stick him anymore, and they get rid of him, or they gently persuade him to leave, or what have you, or he gets an offer elsewhere. This is going to be a situation where he won't be doing that. He's been away from Wolfsburg for a season and a half. Obviously, the situation has deteriorated quite badly, but you know, how is this going to affect his relationship with the players? A lot of those players from before are still there. You know, will he be able to get on all right with them? And, you know, of course, you know, how's it going to go with Diego, who's a precocious talent, but we understand can be perhaps a bit headstrong.
Well, absolutely. And, yes, Magath is a headstrong guy himself. And you're right, completely right about Diego. Andy, who do you think gets the better deal out of this move? Is it Schalke or is it Wolfsburg?
I'd have to say Wolfsburg. I think Magath, he's got a proven track record wherever he's been. As you say, he is very headstrong. And basically, wherever he goes, he wants complete autonomy. So, obviously, in Germany, we know they often place great emphasis on the sporting director role. Or the manager, as they call it, whereas in England tend to have a manager like Alex Ferguson, which has both roles, and I think the sporting director is largely frowned upon in the UK. But in Germany, it's quite a big role, and Magath tries to fill both. And in fairness, you know, in Wolfsburg, he obviously did a great job, led them to the title in 2009. And at Schalke, he was trying to do the same thing, build a huge project with him at the center of everything, basically. And unfortunately, with Schalke being such a huge club with such a huge fan base, a lot of interaction, a lot of demands coming from different directions, it just didn't sit well with the club, with the board, with the fans, with the players as well. Just a bit too headstrong, didn't fit. And I think Wolfsburg will welcome that as a somewhat smaller club. And obviously, on the back of the success of 2009, I think they'll welcome him back with open arms. That's not to say that Schalke won't have Rangnick back with open arms. He obviously did a good job back in 2005 before he left. And, you know, he's a good manager as well, but very much a different kind of manager.
Yeah, he's a very popular guy at Schalke. So, as you say, that they're going to be looking forward to having him back in the ranks, and obviously he's moved on and done good things with Hoffenheim, and he's got a group of players that I think that, you know, given some moulding, he can do good things with at Schalke, and maybe start to bring back a little bit more pride at the club. And he's also got, of course, the Champions League to look forward to. But let's not dwell on those two clubs much longer. So we'll move on from there. So the movement of Magath and Rangnick was obviously pretty big, but it didn't stop there. The next coaches who are going to have a change of scene are Jupp Heynckes from Bayer Leverkusen and Freiburg's Robin Dutt. Heynckes, who started the chain rolling, really, by telling the club that he wouldn't continue at the Bayer Arena next season. He's believed to be off to Bayern Munich in the summer to replace Louis van Gaal. The Werksel worked very quickly to fill the void with Robin Dutt. Personally, I think it's a great move for both clubs. Bayern will have a safe pair of hands in Heynckes, and he likes to play attractive football, and Dutt is getting the respect that his progress with Freiburg deserves. What do you think, Terry?
Well, I think I agree with you certainly for on both counts. I think Heynckes is definitely a safe pair of hands. Out of the game for a little while before coming back in to replace Klinsmann until the end of the season, that was enough to earn him his place at Leverkusen, which he's done a decent job there. More than a decent job there, and his pedigree in European Champions League as well can't be discounted. So they would probably look at him and say, "We're probably going to have to make some changes." You would like to think that they would look at that their defence, Bayern Munich, the Bayern Munich board, and think, "Well, we need to spend a bit of money, bring in some players, and Heynckes is the kind of guy who's going to be able to do that and make that work." So he'll be used to dealing with big players, big egos, and if you like, kind of rehabilitated back into management. And it's a perfect time, really. I think it's a perfect time for him. Robin Dutt, well, it is just a natural next step, isn't it? Magnificent job at Freiburg. And Leverkusen is a big club in Germany, if not necessarily a big European club. But certainly the idea of a young, ambitious manager like that, all being well from their point of view, managing in the Champions League next year, is very exciting for us neutrals. It's possible that Leverkusen fans will be worried about his lack of experience and how that will work when they're juggling a European campaign and a Bundesliga campaign. But nevertheless, it's hard to imagine. Maybe Thomas Tuchel would have been a good replacement for Heynckes had he been available. But they've obviously got their man that they wanted.
Yeah, Andy, what do the press in Munich and Bayern fans think of Heynckes returning for a third term, or potentially returning for a third term? Is it, you know, they haven't signed this contract yet, though, have they?
No, it's not agreed yet. And Heynckes has even said there haven't been any concrete negotiations. All he said in the press is that he's spoken to his good friend Uli Hoeneß, and I think it's inevitable, really, at least judging by developments so far. It's nicely set up for that to happen. For Heynckes to go to Bayern, although he has said that he had informed the management at Leverkusen that he was going to depart anyway at the end of the season before Bayern started making overtures towards him. I think Bayern certainly happy if they can get him. You know, he's well respected. He's well respected throughout Germany. He's someone who the Bayern fans are certainly not against. What I'm wondering is, you know, he's just left Leverkusen. Initially, the reason was, he's now saying there are no personal reasons, but his initial reason when he said so a year ago or more perhaps was that you know, he wanted to retire basically, and he was under pressure from his wife. So to give that reason to Leverkusen, see it through, leave the club, and then pop off to Bayern does seem a little bit unfair on Leverkusen, as they look to embark on a Champions League season, a competition they haven't been in for a couple of years, and it would have been nice for their fans to see what Heynckes could have done in the Champions League, at least if he was going to stay on as a manager. He's not. He's going, and Dutt's coming in, and I think he'll do a good job, I'm sure. But yeah, I think Leverkusen have been a little bit hard done by. And for Bayern, it's only a one-year solution, really. I think, what is he, 65, 64 or 65, Jupp Heynckes. And I think it's only going to be a one-year thing. So Bayern are going to be in exactly the same position this time next year. Possible effects on the players during the season, I'm not sure. We'll see. It might go well for them, of course. It might be a dream one-off season for Heynckes. But it seems, well, certainly not a long-term appointment, and I think they're going to be in the same pickle again next year.
Well, I've got a little bit of a theory, actually, that why Heynckes going to Bayern Munich might be an excellent move for the club. Because, as you say, he is at the tail end of his career, and he could be retiring, you know, within the next couple of years. But that just gives a little more time for some of these young up-and-coming coaches that that Germany's doing so well at producing to get a little bit more experience, a little bit more nous in big games, and then they'll be ready to pick off whoever is the best of those. You know, it could be Jurgen Klopp, it could be Thomas Tuchel, it could be Robin Dutt, but it just gives it a couple more years for them to bed in, and then Bayern Munich are there ready to strike, to pick off the best of them.
Yeah, I think that,
absolutely.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah, sorry, Andy. I can only agree with that. I think that that's a very good call, John. Very right.
Oh, well, okay. Finally, the last change happened just today, which is Tuesday when we're recording. Mikael Skibber was relieved of his duties by relegation-threatened Eintracht Frankfurt after a win, but generally after a poor set of results. And he's been swiftly replaced by Christoph Daum, who's had stints at Bayer Leverkusen, Cologne, and won the championship with Stuttgart in 1992. A return to the Bundesliga for a coach. He really knows the rounds at this level, doesn't he, Terry?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's a sound appointment for Frankfurt, given that they clearly felt that they needed to do something. I feel sorry for Mikael Skibber. I don't know what the full story is there, but if it's a question of him being sacked on the basis of his results, and I do feel terribly sorry for him, because I did like what he has done for Frankfurt for the last couple of seasons, but that awful run after the winter break has really done for Frankfurt. Daum is he's proven at that level, proven at any conceivable level. If anyone's going to get Frankfurt moving in the other direction, it's going to be him.
Well, I would say that the one thing about Daum that I find is that he kind of starts flitting around, that he flits around between Germany and Turkey, you know, Besiktas or Fenerbahce and a German club. Is he going to stick around, or is this another reasonably temporary appointment? What do you think, Andy?
I think it'll depend completely on how it goes. I mean, first of all, it's important to point out that Daum's only got a contract until the end of the season. The club and Daum himself have both said that the plan is to work together to continue beyond the current season. But obviously that's going to depend much on whether Frankfurt stay up, first of all, which I think they probably will. I think if it goes well, if he can start bringing them up the table, if they have a positive end to the season, we can discuss it, or at least they can discuss it in the summer, take it from there. We'll see. I mean, he has got a good record, more or less, wherever he's been. I mean, the last time he was in Germany, he took Cologne up into the Bundesliga before leaving in 2009, of course, and then going over to Fenerbahce. And he did do well in Turkey. I think the basics are there for Frankfurt to move up the table. And we saw in the first half of the season how well they did. They were up in, the top six for a while. Under Skibbe, which is why for me it came as such a huge surprise this morning when I read that Skibbe had been fired. But as you say, I think Daum has certainly got the credentials to get them out of this mess. And we'll have to wait and see at the end of the season whether it's going to continue or whether he's going to flee once again to either Turkey or even Austria.
Well, yes, that is his other favoured location. Either Turkey or Austria. Well, okay, guys, let's wrap up the coaches carousel right there, and I'm just going to go through the results from last weekend before we move on to part two. Gladbach were beaten 1-0 by Kaiserslautern. Hamburg absolutely thrashed Cologne 6-2. Bayern got a win at Freiburg. Werder Bremen did their survival chances no harm whatsoever with a 3-1 win away at Nuremberg. Hanover beat Hoffenheim 2-1. Frankfurt in Skibber's last game beat St. Pauli 2-1. Borussia Dortmund and Mainz shared a 1-1 draw. And Bayer Leverkusen saw off Schalke 2-0, and Stuttgart drew with Wolfsburg. Okay, well, that wraps it up for part one. In part two, we're going to talk about the upcoming internationals. Well, welcome back. Let's have a chat about the German national team now. This weekend they take on Kazakhstan and then Australia on Tuesday. The game against Kazakhstan is a Euro 2012 qualifier, and Australia is obviously a friendly, but both opposition have German coaches, strangely enough. We won't go into that too much, but let's start talking about the squad. Not too many surprises, but Sven Bender could make his debut if selected. He was picked for the last squad, but didn't make it onto the pitch. Surely this would be testament to the great season that he's had if it happens this time around. Terry, he's been fantastic, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been fantastic. It worked out really well when he first arrived. It took him a bit of time to bed in, the way Jurgen Klopp does these things with Dortmund. This has been his breakthrough season, and obviously rewarded with a cap. I think that Jurgen Klopp may well see him as being very vital in the future in that German midfield. And this is a perfect time to introduce him in with one game against the bottom team in the group, and a friendly match as well. If he doesn't play in the European Championship qualifier, then there's a good chance that he'll get a run out against Australia as well.
Yeah, and Andy, the German team is absolutely riddled with great young talent, and you know, if they get the win against Kazakhstan, then obviously it's all systems go for what is potentially a fantastic tournament next year in Poland and Ukraine.
Absolutely. Well, I don't think you can really look at any other side as being the favourites for Euro 2012. Obviously, there's Spain, but the way Germany are coming through, I think Spain are going to have to do a little bit of rejigging by that point. But Germany will really just be hitting top gear, I think, with Schweinsteiger and Khedira, who will orchestrate things from the centre. Which is why I probably think Sven Bender will play against Australia rather than Kazakhstan. He might get some minutes against Kazakhstan, but I think in the one, although it should really be a walkover for Germany. You know, sometimes these games do get a little bit sort of bitty in midfield, and I think that he'll go with experience for that first game and perhaps give Bender his first cap in the second match. But yeah, I mean, Germany, 12 points, 4 wins from as many games. That'll be up to 15 if they win that one. Only one goal conceded so far. 13 scored, and you look at the other teams in the group, and it's not like there's maybe a Croatia or similar level side to really threaten them at the top. You'd probably look at Turkey as being the biggest threat, and they've already lost 2 games. Austria in second, actually, and looking fairly decent. They've won 2 of their 3 games, but there isn't really another side in that group A that looks like they could challenge.
No, and moving on to the next game, it's against Australia. Now, they had a very, very good Asian Cup. So they have had a lot more experience of being gelled together in tournament football recently. So they will be good opposition, I think, for Germany to play. But let's just have a little reminder. The last time that they did take on each other was in the World Cup. Germany won 4-0. Goals from Lukas Podolski, Miroslav Klose, Thomas Müller and Kakao. I suspect that the latter will be is the only one who will obviously he won't be playing, because I don't believe that he Kakao made the squad. So all the rest of them are there and could inflict yet more damage on Australia if they're on song again. Terry, I think it's going to be a good game though.
Yeah, I think so. Australia, I think, are approaching a bit of a crossroads with their squad. It's a decent squad, but I think what they're trying to do there is they're trying to bring in some guys from the A-League, their domestic league, which has only been around since 2005. And they're trying to bring those players through, because you know you've got guys like Harry Kewell, like Mark Schwarzer, who are looking at perhaps, towards the end of their careers. Even Brett Emerton's 32, I'm just looking at their squad list here. Tim Cahill is 31, which I didn't realise. I thought he was younger than that. So I think that they're trying to regenerate the squad to an extent, which is going to be tough, because I don't think that there's that many players of the same quality playing in the European League coming through. So this is going to be an interesting period in Australia's national team history, because they've had that wonderful bump from this crop of extremely talented European-based players that took them through 2006 and really engaged the sport with the population, where obviously it is very much still a minority sport. in terms of spectating, and then the development of the A-League and what's going on there. So they're a very interesting footballing nation, Australia. I do keep half an eye out on what goes on over there. I think that they'll be anxious, one, to wipe away the unpleasantness of the Asian Cup final defeat to Japan, which I think they will probably feel that they should have won. I saw that game, I'm not certain I would agree. And of course, yes, so they'll be anxious to try and, you'd think, you know, have a gather go at Germany and say, well, OK, you try and beat us 4-0 again, guys, because I think, well, you know, you try that again. And so, yeah, inevitably, any game against Australia, I think in any sport, is always worth watching.
And that game is in Mönchengladbach on Tuesday. Just a quick question, Andy. Obviously, here in England, we love the fact that we have our national stadium, and all the games for the England team happen at Wembley. Well, when it was being built, it was the great tour of the country. And is there that feeling that because German games take place all over the country, it's the chance for the nation to watch their team? Do you get that feeling by talking to people?
Absolutely. Well, I think I think opinion's always going to be divided, largely depending on where you live as well. I think certainly if you're in England and you live around London or at least within a couple of hours drive, then it's great that it's at Wembley, and you'll always sort of advocate the argument that it's the national home, it's the home of football, it's the biggest stadium, and that's where the national team should play. But Germany has so many great stadiums. I mean, I think the last friendly, I could be wrong here, but was it played in Dortmund? And that's another 80,000 stadium, which I think has even got a higher capacity than the Berlin Olympia Stadium. And Gladbach is another great ground, a lot of history, great fan base, even though the team obviously isn't doing too well at the moment. But that's, well over 40,000, the Borussia Park. And yeah, it gives fans from all over the country, and Germany is a big country. You know, it's must be 4 or 5 times bigger than England. So, it is a great opportunity for fans up and down the country to see their national team, and to see some great players on. You know, gives them an opportunity they might not otherwise have.
Well, personally, one of the things that I like about watching the German national team, personally, you know, obviously not being German and being an Englishman, I don't hold that affection for the German national team. But one of the things I very much enjoy is being able to see players who I watch regularly, who I used to watch regularly in the Bundesliga, and now don't get that much of a chance. Mesut Özil and Sami Khedira are obviously going to be back into the side, and it's going to be great to see how they've grown during their time in Spain. What do you think, Terry?
Yeah, of course. Always a pleasure to see those guys playing football. I don't watch a great deal of La Liga, so I don't really get to see how they've got on. But they don't appear to have had any difficulties integrating back into the squad. I think the thing that about this current German national team is it looks like a team predominantly made up of players who have known each other since they were children. And I think that they have a chemistry about them that is very similar to the way that the Spanish team currently play. And perhaps because of their sort of like legacy from Barcelona and the youth system there. They can go away and play in another country and not play in the Bundesliga and yet come back in. But the experience that they will gain from that different culture, from that different footballing style, is bound to permeate through the squad with two such important players that it's very difficult to see anybody really matching Germany over the next year or so as we go into the European Championships. And I think in many ways, I think the only people who are likely to beat Germany will be themselves. I think they're that good.
Well, absolutely. Well, I think that's probably a good point to knock it on the head for this week. Andy, I'd like to say thank you for being on the show for the second time, as we've already discussed. And hopefully that we can get you back again.
Absolutely. It's been an absolute pleasure. So thanks very much for having me.
Thanks, Andy.
Let's knock it on the head completely. So as we normally do, we'll give you some details on how to keep up with us. We're both on Twitter. In fact, all three of us are on Twitter. Terry is at Bundesbag. I'm at Bundesliga World, and Andy is at Andy Bundy. So you can keep up with all three of us on Twitter. And, well, is all we can say now is thank you for listening and goodbye.